It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Welcome to Halloween on the Horn. It's the 31st day of October, 2017. Yes, I realize I sound like Melanoma Trump's uncle, but that's just how it is. Yes, indeed, it is the Halloween. It's the fun-raising, free Halloween edition of the Horn. Yes, I can happily report that in the intervening 24 hours since last we spoke, we finished up all the fundraising for the month of October, so there will be not another word said about it. Yes, 4 minutes past the hour. I was a little bit late getting things fired up. I apologize for that, but it's Halloween, and I had to take the big bags of candy into Ferg, who will be handing out Halloween candy duties for the evening. It's a little hard to host a radio program and pass out candy at the same time. Yes. Hi, I'm Vlad Kincaid. You know, that would have been funny a few years ago, but now we have a Vlad problem. Kind of leaves you in a lurch. See what I did there? A lurch with Halloween type stuff. But here we are. And we are together, and we've got a lot of stuff to talk about this evening. And some Halloween-type fun to have. You know, I usually thank all the contributors to keep this program on the air at the beginning of the program. But part of the reason I was late getting to air was the fact that I was sitting here swearing at the iPad, where I deal with things like email. Because it was loading an update, and I might note, still, you know, is. Because that kind of stuff just happens, and we have to deal with it. Into each life, some rain must fall. Speaking of fall, you know, that's what time of year it is. And I've got a little question for you. Before we go any further, yes, a question. Mm-hmm. Have you ever found yourself in a situation where you'd like to, well, where you felt like you care about the welfare of your fellow human beings? Have you ever been there? Have you ever been struck by that sensation? Does the thought of beaten and tortured puppies make you feel a little bit queasy? Does watching brown people being bombed to kingdom come make you sick to your stomach? Do you grind your teeth at night, stressing about sweatshop child labor in third world countries? Does the idea of has-been broke dick former reality show host ascending to the highest office in the land while colluding with a hostile foreign power to subjugate American democracy shake you to your very core? If your answer to any of these questions is yes, fair listener, you're hardly alone. Too many of our fellow Americans are afflicted with the disease experts have labeled caring or giving a fuck. Well, have no fear, dear sentient fellow traveler. Brand new this Halloween from the scientific geniuses at Horn Labs comes Pernicious Pumpkin. Yes, after only a mere 45 doses of Pernicious Pumpkin, you're guaranteed to be entirely rid of any traces of human decency. No longer will you have to feel bad when a pack of concert-goers get massacred in cold blood, when the next overworked serf at Foxconn plunges to his untimely death, or the next time that juvenile immigrant cancer patient is denied badly needed medical attention. Absolutely. Pernicious Pumpkin from Horn Labs is free of impurities, such as lead and other heavy metals. It's also gluten-free, fat-free, low-carb, dairy-free. Active ingredient, 90% excrementium vaccinum. Pernicious Pumpkin also doubles as a reference to the current White House occupant. See how it works? Like I said, they're geniuses there at Horn Labs. Order now, and for only three easy extortions of $33.33, you'll receive a full three-month supply of our exclusive Pernicious Pumpkin formula. And if you're among the first 4.5 callers, we'll throw in a pack of test strips absolutely free, so you can test the extent of your gullibility in the comfort of your own home, all the while laid back in your rent-to-own Barca lounger, pen in hand, signing those reverse mortgage papers. You know, I have to tell you, I've never cared much for pumpkin, dear listener, so to this day, the only way I can consistently get my daily dose of fuck it vitamins and minerals is through these tasty, albeit bland, Pernicious Pumpkin capsules. Important safety information. Pernicious Pumpkin works in mysterious ways, just like God, and should be taken right before operating heavy machinery for best results. Side effects may include, but are limited to, advanced gullibility syndrome, AGS, lack of appetite, too much apathy, too much apothecary, a complete and utter lack of shame, diminished sense of responsibility, compulsive tweeting while parking your caboose on the crapper, feeling incestuous towards your own female offspring, incessantly playing pretend golf on weekends, inability to form a coherent thought, inability to form a coherent sentence, colluding with hostile foreign dictators, kowtowing to murderous despots, grabbing random members of the opposite gender by their genitals, homophobia, self-aggrandizement, wispy comb-overs, and last but not least, pining for tacky former Soviet strumpets may cause unwanted erections. Call now. Operators are laying down to reject your order. Or, alternatively, just go to www.perniciouspumpkin.com for more details. Pernicious Pumpkin. Only from Horn Labs. Accept no substitutes. Use no hooks. Post no bills. This side up. FOB COD. Pernicious Pumpkin from Horn Labs. And you know what I'm doing right now? I'm going to Pernicious Pumpkin, if I can spell it. I'm going to Pernicious Pumpkin right now. Oh yes indeed. Pernicious Pumpkin from Horn Labs. And big thanks to Brother Deacon Asa for getting all of that going. What a list. Pernicious Pumpkin from Horn Labs, only for this Halloween. Well done, Brother Deacon Asa. Well done. And so that takes us to the pretty much the heart and soul of the program. Mm-hmm. And understand. I know what's going on here. I recognized it from the start. But it's Halloween, and it works too well as a bit. And so I am going to take the bait. If that's all right. Submitted for your approval. A man out of time and out of place. With an authoritarian urge to bow and scrape to treasonous, racist, old white men. Raised in Boston, but wishing badly that in fact he'd been raised in the genteel confines of old Charleston. Imagine that man called upon to divert the attention from a nation, suddenly thrust from what had been his ancient and desired, yearned for past into a present he just wishes would go away. Consider that man has ridden on a rail into the Twilight Zone. You know, of course, of which I speak. Absolutely. I'm talking about John Kelly. And like I said, I know I'm taking the bait. I know that the only reason that John Kelly said what he said on the maiden voyage of the Laura Ingraham show over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. The only reason he did what he did is because he was under orders. And now I don't know this for a fact, okay? Let's be clear. I do not know this for a fact. But my prophetic bona fides are pretty damn good. And so yesterday, with the indictment of Paul Manafort and what's his name, Ryan Gates, and more importantly, George Papadopoulos, and with the recognition of the geniuses there in the White House that some of them had probably been having intensely chatty conversations with the said Papadopoulos for a couple of months now, while it was apparent from the filings released yesterday that, well, he'd been wearing a wire. Something had to be done. Something must be done. We've got to protect their phony baloney jobs, gentlemen. Harumph. Well, we have been inflamed from time to time over the past 6 months, well, more than that. And it's a real issue, but the question is, why now? Well, the question answers itself. You know, I guess I need to check in here and make sure that I'm actually broadcasting. I see send, I see send, I see record. Yeah, I know I am, because Arthur responded to our pitch. So, yes, and by the way, if you check on this Halloween Eve, or this evening of Halloween, well, yesterday would have been Halloween Eve. I get ahead of myself. Sometimes I get behind myself. No, if you do, if you pick out a free screen name and a free password and jump into the chat room, you will be immediately met and greeted by Anatole and Earther and Hoghead and Jug of Punch and Silent R. Lamar and Matador and Ralps and Squeaky 41 and Steve from Georgia Stan, VT Blom, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave. See, most of us only get into costume once a year. Sparky gets into costume every time he folds space to become Man Cave. See how it works? Yeah. I'm in there, too. So, anyway, back to the basic idea here. We have, you know, we have a Confederate fetish problem in this country. And it shouldn't be a debate. It's only a debate because there are intensely stupid people, historical revisionists in this country, who are trying to find some way to justify slavery and sedition and treason and open and making open warfare against one's own country. And so yesterday, with the news that broke, suddenly it became necessary to create a diversion. And, you know, former generals know all about creating a diversion. They're the kind of folks who have built careers on looking at fresh-faced little 18-year-olds and saying, "Son, go out there and get your ass shot off and create a diversion so the rest of us can hightail it out of here before our asses get shot off." Okay? And so it was that on the maiden voyage of the Laura Ingraham show over on Fox, none other than White House Chief of Staff General John Kelly showed up to try to initiate a shitstorm of stupidity. Mm-hmm. Because basically what he proved is that John Kelly, you go to West Point and you study military history and you're supposed to just know all this old strategy. You know about Scipio Africanus and you know about Hannibal and you know about Frederick the Great and von Clausewitz and you learn military histories of, you know, don't divide your forces and you learn how to dig entrenchments and build revetments and all that military kind of stuff. Well, apparently John F. Kelly of Boston, and by that I don't mean Boston, Kentucky. There is one, you know. John Kelly of Boston, Massachusetts, descendant of Irish immigrants who were once discriminated against profoundly by the old Boston Brahmin bigots, and who in turn turned their bigotry against people of color, some Irish did, a lot of Irish did, particularly in New York and Boston in, say, like 1864. I don't know if the John Kelly Kellys were in America by 1864, but, you know, let's say there's a 50-50 chance. But he showed up over on Fox to display the fact that he knows absolutely nothing whatsoever about, well, history. Because apparently there were marching orders. Mm-hmm. And yes, in case you're wondering, I am well aware of what happened this evening in New York. Uh, someone driving a pickup truck drove into a bunch of pedestrians, drove in the bike lane and ran. And it's horrible. And it is being described as an act of terrorism. And since they're describing it so quickly as an act of terrorism, I can only assume that the driver was not white. And not pedestrians, people, bicyclists, cyclists. And our buddy Ron in the still-not-quite-frozen north said, "I'm distressed about the terrorism incident in New York. I sincerely hope that it wasn't perpetrated by, one, a Muslim, or, two, a black person. However, the fact that NYPD has already labeled this an act of terrorism makes me suspicious." Well, it will be a monumental sea change if, in fact, they're labeling it an act of terrorism and there's a white guy behind the wheel. Yeah, unless maybe he's fully kitted out in, say, Death's Head unit of the SS or the Africa Corps or something like that. So maybe we'll talk about that in a little bit. We'll have to see. Let's check this out and see if John Kelly, Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, you know, that sort of thing.
And while these indictments are getting a lot of attention CNN in Washington, a comment from White House Chief of Staff John Kelly is also raising some eyebrows. He did an interview where he discussed the U.S. Civil War and taking down statues of Confederate figures. Kelly praised Confederate General Robert E. Lee, and he said compromise could have prevented the war, which was fought over slavery. Take a listen.
I would tell you that Robert E. Lee was an honorable man. He was a man that gave up his country to fight for his state, which in 150 years ago was more important than country. It was always loyalty to state first back in those days. Now it's different today. But the lack of an ability to compromise led to the Civil War. And men and women of good faith on both sides made their stand where their conscience had them make their stand.
Yeah, there it is in the full stupidity of all its stupid glory. And what he was doing, and you can tell that this is a bullshit setup kind of arrangement, because he makes the same argument that his boss made a couple of months back, that somehow or another there was an insufficient level of compromise in the run-up to the Civil War, which in fact is bullshit. It really is. Because there were compromises upon compromises in which the rest of the country tried to placate the warlike and belligerent and bellicose South, which was hell-bent on expanding slavery into the newly acquired areas of the country that we got, say, after the Mexican War, and before the Mexican War, for that matter. The first thing on Southern minds after the Louisiana Purchase was, well, I guess it's time to get some slaves up there. I mean, for Christ's sakes, Lewis and Clark took an enslaved human being with them on the Corps of Discovery. And he turned out to be more of a contribution to the efforts of the Corps of the Discovery than some of the white folks. Of course, that's consistent with the history of this country, where, you know, people of color wound up doing most of the heavy lifting, especially all over the South. But this idea, and this, what was missing from that clip was his statement that, I guess in 200 years they'll be pulling down our statues too. Well, John, old shoe, old, whatever you are, John,
You dick!
Yeah, that. They're not going to build any statues to you, buddy. Unless this country is completely overrun by Nazis and Klansmen, in which case there will probably be a statue of you on every goddamn corner in this country. Mm-hmm. Because, see, there was a lot of compromise. In fact, oddly enough, the Dred Scott decision, written by Chief Justice Roger Taney, struck down one of those compromises that was an effort to hold the country together because the slave-owning states were demanding not just equality with the northern states, but superiority. They actually passed laws in the Congress of the United States to prevent anyone from criticizing slavery or even raising the issue of abolition. This is what is known as fact among historians. And so there was John Kelly talking about how honorable Robert E. Lee was. And you can't, I don't know about you, but I can't help but think that if he thinks Robert E. Lee was an honorable man, well, he wouldn't have much trouble blinking at treason in the modern age, would he? Any man who thinks there was honor in treason 155, 160 years ago is not going to think much, is not going to think there's any treason, say, in, oh, I don't know, selling one's country out to a hostile foreign power. And bear in mind, of course, within the context of the history of the recent unpleasantness, the Confederates desperately tried to sell out to a foreign power during the pendency of that conflict. They worked with the French, and they thought they were oh so close to getting the British to side with the South and come in, kind of the way the French had come in to support the young country at the time of the Revolution. Oh dear. Update coming from the New York incident. Sparky letting me know that the guy in the truck hollered Aloha Snack Bar. Well, fuck. But that explains how they knew it was terrorism so quick. Mm-hmm. But this lack of compromise claim is worse than bullshit. It's the most pernicious form of lie. And in point of fact, I've got a I've got a quote here that no, I gotta find it. Had it handy. There it is. Let's see. We were talking about lack of compromise. The only compromise the South was interested in was the one where the North sat down, shut up, and tolerated slavery forevermore. The Constitution itself begins with a compromise. The Three-Fifths Compromise. That was the only way that James Madison and Alexander Hamilton could get the rest of the southern states to come along, is if they counted slaves as three-fifths of a human being, so that that was for purposes of apportioning population in order to determine how many seats the southern states would have in the House of Representatives, which ultimately gave the southern states far more power in the House than they would otherwise have had they merely been counting white folks. Yes. And so it was in March of 1861, as Sandra reminds us, with the Civil War aborning, that the brand spanking new shiny vice president of the Confederate States of America issued the following statement. Alexander Stevens was his name. He was from, was it Georgia? Pretty sure it was Georgia. Maybe it was, I don't think it was South Carolina. I think it was Georgia. But Alexander Stevens, he's a wee little fucker. Just a little tiny little bastard. Never could have actually fought in the war. And he said the following. Our new government is founded upon exactly this idea. Its foundations are laid. Its cornerstone rests upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man, that slavery, subordination to the superior race, is his natural and normal condition. This, our new government, is the first in the history of the world based upon this great physical, philosophical, and moral truth. I wonder how much assuming that heaven and hell are real, I wonder how much Alexander Stevens enjoys getting a pineapple shoved up his ass every day of every minute of every hour of all eternity. Ever since, you know, the late 19th century. Jesus. Meanwhile, Jack in Shreveport says, Kelly also used the, there were good people on both sides like Trump did, referring to Charlottesville. And it's pathetically transparent. At least it is to me. I hope it is to you. This is a hot button divisive issue. It was a pain in the ass for Trump a couple of months back in Charlottesville. Now it comes in handy in a desperate effort to divert from the fact that, well, it's Mueller time, and there's reason for a lot of folks close to Trump to be real nervous about what's going on. And by the way, I'm even prouder. I think there's a little luster on my prophetic skills. You may recall Friday evening, I mentioned that, you know, I had an outside bet on the indicted person being United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third. I think we have reason to think that there might be some paperwork emerging from the Mueller investigation that points directly toward him, that might even have his name on it, be directed that it be served upon him. Mm-hmm. Because, well, for starters, there's that photograph that I mentioned last night, where George Papadopoulos, whom suddenly no one in the Trump administration has ever remotely heard of, is sitting at a meeting in the Trump campaign. It's March of 2016. It is, in point of fact, March the 31st of 2016. I always remember March the 31st because that was my mama's birthday. It's March the 31st of 2016. The Mar-a-Lago Mussolini sits at the end of end of the table, and at the nearer end, in the foreground of the photo, sits none other than the Keebler elf from hell himself, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, who at the time was still just a lowly senator from Talabama. And in betwixt the two, on the far side of the table, sits none other than the guy no one had ever heard of, George Papadopoulos, who wore a wire for 2 months. who has been what was the word in the statement? Proactively cooperating in the investigation. Proactively. He's not just passively cooperating. He's not, yeah, well, I'll tell you what I know. No, no, no. He was going out fishing with them. Cooperating is cooperating. Yeah, sure, I'll tell you what. Yeah, please, don't throw me in that slammer there over there, please. Okay, great. I saw him. That, yeah, we did it. Yeah, when we ran the money through the Bank of Cyprus. I'm guilty as shit. And yeah, I lied to you about when we done it, too. That's cooperating. Proactively cooperating, on the other hand. Ha-ha! That's when they say, well, hey, buddy, you don't want to take the fall by yourself, do you? Really? You don't want to do that, do you? I mean, you aren't the worst of the lot. You're just kind of a low-level schmuck, aren't you, George? Ah, yeah, definitely low-level schmuck. That's what I am. Well, you'd like to help us going forward then, wouldn't you, George? Love to help. Definitely love to help. And so it gets a little more complicated, or not complicated, but interesting. That's the word I'm looking for, interesting. When you consider the statements that were made by Attorney General Designee Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, under a withering cross-examination from Al Franken of Minnesota. I will bet you that Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III spits on the ground at the mere mention of Al Franken. Oh, he thinks he's so funny. Well, he used to be funny. Now the joke's on you there, Jefferson Davis. And I pointed out Friday that one of the easier gets in this whole scenario as it has developed would probably be United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. Because his perjury is almost self-proving. He did not have immunity for that sworn testimony that he gave before before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Now, remember that photo? The one with, yeah, the pernicious pumpkin at one end and the Keebler elf from hell at the other and George Papadopoulos in the middle? You know what was taking place at that meeting? On March the 31st, 2016. Well, that was the meeting where George, whom nobody had ever heard of before, but somehow managed to get into the meeting, informed everybody sitting at the table about the really hip, groovy, keen contacts that he had made with the Russian government. Yep. And so then, a short time later, you get an exchange between Franken and Sessions, in which Franken said, if there's any evidence that anyone affiliated with the Trump campaign communicated with the Russian government in the course of this campaign, what will you do? To which, in a state of high dudgeon and absolute flummoxation with the aspersions cast upon the dignity of his dignitude, Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III replied, Senator Franken, I'm not aware of any of those activities. I've been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communication with the Russians, and I'm unable to comment on it.
Uh-huh.
That there would be a lie. And that there would be criminal conduct. So again, for having noticed that, I award myself not a cowbell, but just a... Well, I'd give myself a pat on the back, but it hurts too hard to move my arm that way. It's an imaginary pat on the back. And I admit, there would be Schadenfreude. There's going to be Schadenfreude for more than enough for everybody as this thing unfolds. Lots and lots of Schadenfreude. I got a note from Steve in New York a few minutes ago. And it's in regard to the event. Do we call it an attack in New York? Steve says, "This was near my office. All okay here. Yes, sadly, the man apparently yelled, 'Aloha snack bar.' Seems too cliched, but that's the report. A video shows a person running from the scene. Man with long beard. However, he appeared white to me." Oh, those crafty Amish. You never expect to see him driving a pickup truck. And then he throws them all off the scent by yelling, "Aloha snack bar." Jesus. That's the latest on that issue. But we have, it's Titanic Tuesday. I neglected to mention that it's Titanic Tuesday. And I frankly don't think there's a bigger example of Titanic intellect than what went down there between Laura Ingraham and John Kelly. Thing is, we'll still find more to talk about in the coming, hour and 15 minutes or so of the program yet to come. Because there always is. The Titanic intellect? Yeah. How about the Reverend Huxterby's daughter? Because, of course, unironically, the for-profit media and those Johnny-on-the-spot journalists of the White House press corps, they fell to scrapping over that Robert E. Lee bone for all they were worth. And it was kind of worth it. It really was. Glenn Thrush from the New York Times called out Sarah's southernness. She is, after all, a proud daughter of old Arkansas. Yes, she is. Mm-hmm. And then that's when the fun started. Yeah. Let's check in, shall we? Do let's.
Sarah, Glenn, I had more faith in you to be able to ask a question all by yourself. But
the other thing that General Kelly said yesterday was in reference to General Lee, and he said that the Civil War was the result of a failure to compromise. Was he suggesting that there be a compromise on the abolition of slavery? Can you expand on exactly what he was talking about?
Look, all of our leaders have flaws. Washington, Jefferson, JFK, Roosevelt, Kennedy, that doesn't diminish their contributions to our country, and it certainly can't erase them from our history. And General Kelly was simply making the point.
Wait a damn minute. Did you hear that list of presidents there? I think we need to hear that again.
Failure to compromise. Was he suggesting that there be a compromise on the abolition of slavery? Can you expand on exactly what he was talking about?
Look, all of our leaders have flaws. Washington, Jefferson, JFK, Roosevelt, Kennedy.
I did hear what I thought of. Because, you know, and she named them in order, Washington, Jefferson, Roosevelt. Washington, Roosevelt, JFK, Roosevelt, Kennedy. I didn't know we'd had two President Kennedys. James Knox Polk, that would be JKP. Titanic intellect, I'm telling you.
There would be a compromise on the abolition of slavery. Can you expand on exactly what he was talking about?
Look, all of our leaders have flaws. Washington, Jefferson, JFK, Roosevelt, Kennedy. That doesn't diminish their contributions to our country, and it certainly can't erase them.
Let's see. It actually goes Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, Jackson. Did I miss one? Did she mean JQA? John Quincy Adams? I have a kind of hard time sorting this one out. JFK, Kennedy, FDR. And by the way, which Roosevelt? But it's that Kennedy JFK thing that it just didn't quite get it. And they all had flaws. I never knew that Kennedy was a slave owner who committed treason against his own country. Now, Jefferson, definitely a slave owner, definitely fathered children through a sort of probably kind of rapey relationship with one of his slaves who was the half-sister of his dead wife. Yeah. Washington had slaves. Kind of came into him, though, because he married well. And it's always been one of the interesting things about George Washington. No kids. Married an older woman, Martha Custis, and she, as the saying goes, had money of her own. That's her house that the tourists visit near Washington, D.C., every day of every year, except maybe Christmas. You know, Mount Vernon? Yeah, that's Martha's house, not George's. And when when George shuffled off this mortal coil and turned into a mural on the ceiling of the interior of the Capitol Rotunda, the apotheosis of George Washington, meaning the transformation into a god of George Washington. Don't try explaining that to the fundies. They'll lose their mind. Well, he provided in his will for his slaves to be freed. Jefferson never could quite come get around to doing that because, well, dagnabbit, Jefferson was real good at high-toned thinking, but not much good at running a plantation. And so, consequently, slave labor was the only thing that ever made him any money. And I do mean the only thing. Yeah, Michael and Madison is having the same problem. Maybe she thinks John Forbes Kerry was president? I mean, after all, Fox thinks Hillary's president. Oh, cowbell for that one, Michael. Definitely cowbell. So they all, they all had their flaws. It's just that, well, one, she gave off a list of former presidents. And I hardly, I think, need to note that, well, Robert E. Lee is not in that list of presidents. Yeah, okay, here's a good list, courtesy of Earther. Washington, Jefferson, Caligula, Genghis Khan, Ketchup, Stalin. Oh, wait. Oh, geez, yeah, I know. Yeah. Uh-huh. Ketchup, Stalin. Bilgewater, mother-in-law. Yeah. Damn, is the job taking a toll on her or what? The "or what" is probably superfluous in that regard. They're all just laughing and carrying on, and yeah, they all had flaws, but they were still great people. I mean, you know, Roosevelt. Which one? There was more than one. Yeah, there were two. Reckon maybe she was trying to come up with FDR, and she came up with JFK, and then Kennedy. Yeah, they all had. Jesus Christ, Sarah. LBJ picked up a beagle by its ears. You can put him in that list of flaws, okay? Now, you know who she doesn't mention? Nixon. A lot of flaws. Lots and lots of flaws. But it gets better. Oh, yeah, it gets titanically better.
Them from our history, and General Kelly was simply making the point that just because history isn't perfect doesn't mean that it's not our history.
No, he didn't say that at all. Just because history isn't perfect, it doesn't mean it's not our history. I'm so glad. I can't tell you. I'm so glad that Dr. Bill O'Brien is not listening to the program right now. Because, I think he'd probably drive straight into a bottle of brown liquor if he'd just heard that. Just because history's not perfect doesn't mean it's not our history. Hey, I'm a long-time knower, I'm a practitioner of the art of word-knowing, and I got not a freaking clue what that even means. No one suggested that our history isn't our history, and certainly no one has suggested that our history isn't perfect. The suggestion is that maybe a nation that actually has some degree of self-awareness and self-regard ought not put up monuments to traitors and slavers. Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Steve from Georgia Stan. But Bob, Sarah's thoughts and prayers are with you. Oh, I'm sure they are. For only $19.95, and call the prayer line there. And one of Pastor Brother Minister, former presidential candidate, Governor Diabetes, Snake Oil Cure Salesman, Daddy Huxterby, will answer and pray just real good. You know, hockey puck. There's still hockey puck warning. This is the okay part. This is the as-good-as-it-gets part. The hockey puck warning comes now.
Follow up. You are a proud daughter of the South. When you see Nathan, like a statue as they had in Memphis, of someone like Nathan Bedford Forrest, who was responsible for the Fort Pillow Massacre and other folks like that, is there a differentiation? Do you think there are certain Confederate figures who don't deserve to be honored, like Nathan Bedford Forrest?
Look, I don't think that we should sit here and debate every moment of history. I think those moments...
I don't think she's ever actually studied history. Where did this girl go to school? Woman, sorry. My bad. Apologies. No offense to our dear friend Haley, so I won't make any reference to to Arkansas Polytechnic for the dumb and stupid. And that's in no wise a reference to the University of Arkansas, a fine, fine institution of higher learning. But really, where did this child even go to college? Did she have anything more than like 12th grade American history? But she's in a box. She's in a bind. She's kind of stuck. Because Glenn Thrush is being a little clever there. You'll notice he identifies Nathan Bedford Forrest as the author of the Fort Pillow Massacre. That is not what history mostly knows Nathan Bedford Forrest for being. Nathan Bedford Forrest is mostly known to history for being the father of the, anybody, Bueller? Ku Klux Klan. So she can't say that statues to Nathan Bedford Forrest need to be pulled down, because then she will rile her boss's base. On the other hand, if she says that statues of Nathan Bedford Forrest need to stay right where the hell they are, then everybody knows that she's apparently a member of the Ku Klux Klan Ladies Auxiliary. Let's enjoy that again.
Massacre and other folks like that. Is there a differentiation? Do you think there are certain Confederate figures who don't deserve to be honored, like Nathan Bedford Forrest?
Look, I don't think that we should sit here and debate every moment of history. I think those moments took place.
Ooh, that told you about, warned you about the hockey puck. I don't think we should sit here and debate every moment of history. Well, Sarah, no one's trying to. It is one specific and particular moment of history that we're not debating with you. They're actually trying to get you to explain the administration's position on it. And there's a big difference between an explanation and a debate. If you're okay with Nathan Bedford Forrest, just say, I love me some Nathan Bedford Forrest, pass me the hood. If you're not, and if your boss is not, say so. But then you'll be lying, because remember, he was raised by a Klansman. The President of the United States, wow, there's another one of those things that, but for our failure of our one-question quadrennial national IQ test, I'd never have to fucking say! The President of the United States' daddy was a Klansman. I mean, sure, my grandfather was a Klansman. I recognize it. And at roughly the same time, I'm not President of the United States. And, what's more, I acknowledge that my grandfather was a Klansman. For however long he was a member of the Klan. I got the photograph to prove it. But I'll own up to it, and I'll say that I try to live my life as the antithesis of that kind of thinking. On the other hand, Donald Trump will not own the fact that his daddy was a Klansman, and perpetuates his daddy's kind of thinking. I don't think we should debate every moment of history. I think those moments took place. Well, I'm glad she thinks those moments took place. I never knew that history was one of those faith-based topics like, advanced Jesus that you take over there at Washed in the Blood U. This may be, I don't have any way of keeping up with things like this, but this may be. I'm willing to go out on a limb here. This may be one of the greatest moments in Titanic Tuesday that this program has ever known. This may be the Titanic Tuesday clip.
Who was responsible for the Fort Pillow massacre and other folks like that? Is there a differentiation? Do you think there are certain Confederate figures who don't deserve to be honored, like Nathan Bedford?
Look, I don't think that we should sit here and debate every moment of history. I think those moments took place. There are moments that we're going to be a lot less proud of than others, but we can't erase the fact that they happened. I think you have to determine where...
Jesus jumping Christ! She just described Nathan Bedford Forrest and, by extension, the Fort Pillow Massacre as a moment we're a lot less proud of. Again, a proud practitioner of the art of word knowing. There is a meaningful difference between saying we are less proud of the fact that Nathan Bedford Forrest was the founder of the Klan and perpetrated the Fort Pillow Massacre. There's that. And then there's... English is a broad and nuanced language. Granted, we don't have 100 different ways to say ice or 200 different ways to say sand like some cultures do. But we got a lot of words. We got the best words. And so there's a difference between saying, there are some moments we're going to be less proud of than others, and saying... there are some moments in history of which we should be, as moral human beings, ashamed. Slavery, for instance, from the moment that it began on this continent until it was eliminated, and then on through Jim Crow and up to the Civil Rights era, and every act of racism and race-based discrimination in this country, those are moments of which we as a nation should be ashamed. Not less proud. This whole administration is in the hands of the goddess of irony right now, and she is working. She's got her hand in the back of Sarah Huckabee's head, and she's working that mouth. And Sarah Huckabee has no choice whatsoever but to say things that the goddess of irony is directing her to say. Because what she said, in terms of the art of knowing words. She said there are moments of which we are less proud. Less proud, and this is all, and granted, I'm an English major, not a mathematician, but there's almost a mathematical quality to this. When you say you are less proud of something, that indicates that you still have some pride in it. You are less proud, say, of Nathan Bedford Forrest than you are of Neil Armstrong setting foot on the moon. Now, of course, the vast majority of Donald Trump's base would even debate that issue. Neil Armstrong, all he did was go to the moon. Nathan Bedford Forrest tried to maintain our precious racial purity and keep us out of the clutches of the mud people. No, the official spokesperson for the President of the United States just said she is actually proud of the father of the Ku Klux Klan. Is this debate over now? Is this discussion done? Well, that's true, too. That's true, too. The angry Indian points out, Bob, they deny the moon landing. I know. The White House press secretary just said she's proud of the man who founded the Klan and who gave impetus to a century of torture and terrorism of people of color who were citizens of this country. I say that slowly and quietly because I want it to have a moment to sink all the way to the bone. Because this, perhaps more than Donald Trump himself saying, hey, there were good people on both sides. Perhaps more than that, this is the moment in which we understand that not only is this a white supremacist president, this is a white supremacist government. It is a white supremacist executive branch. There are moments of which we are less proud. Oh, but okay, let's be fair. She said a lot less proud. So she's got a lot less pride in, say, for example, Nathan Bedford Forrest than she does in, oh, I don't know, her daddy for hustling bullshit, bogus snake oil diabetes cures. But she still has pride in the father of the coup. Klux Klan. Michael in Madison is, I'd say, one more clip away from just running outside and howling at the waxing moon. Quote, I think those moments took place, says Michael in Madison. You can probably hear him from space, like, Con! There's our obligatory Star Trek reference. As Michael notes, the idiotic, empty, Trumpian verbiage rubs off on everyone in this goddamned administration. What the fuck is that supposed to mean? Is she not sure that historical moments took place? She merely believes in the place-taking of moments? Fuck! I'm trying to be a better self-producer here, so I'm pulling back on the microphone. That's why the volume keeps going up and down. But I'm really trying to breathe a little bit of life into the frustration that is evident on every bit, every byte, every pixel of the email that just rolled in. Yeah, you're right. Marty says, didn't Jefferson not have enough to free his? No, he did not. He did not have enough money to be able to free his slaves. Like I said, they were the only thing that made him any money. They were the only people who made him any money, not things, people. Oh, mercifully, we are well into the second hour of the program. Larry notes, until we as a society acknowledge and are as embarrassed by both the genocide of Native Americans and the genocide of slaves and African Americans as the modern-day German people are of the Nazi movement, we will never move forward. And again, that's the truth. And again, it is also the truth that the people who came up with the German ideas on race and racial purity, you know, they threw that word Aryan around rather a lot, but it wasn't concepts of Aryanism that they glommed onto. It is a historical fact that the Nazis looked to the United States, and specifically looked to the way that the dominant white government of the United States treated people of color, black people, and treated the Native Americans. And that is where they got their ideas. Just is. So, let's take a break and we've got the I've got one person on hold. We'll take a break. Happy Halloween. And the Green News Report is coming up with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Yes, that's absolutely true, Ron and Raleigh pointing out. It seems that, once again, Sarah Huckleberry sandbags. And that's very good. That's cowbell worthy. It seems that, once again, Sarah Huckleberry sandbags is making shit up on the fly. And we can have a debate about that, since she likes to talk about debating. We can have a debate about that. Is she making shit up on the fly, or is the goddess of irony making her betray her own racist roots against her will? I guess you could also say that her Freudian slip is showing. Know what I mean? So anyway, a break and then Conversation Radio. This is listener-supported Conversation Radio. And this is The Horn. And we will be... Well, you're not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere, but we're taking a break. Okay? I'm Bob. Boo. It's a long-distance dedication going out to Sarah Huckleberry Sandbags, proud daughter of the South.
Not too bright. You wonder how. thing.
A little twofer. Drive-By Truckers and Will Kimbrough.
There's no power in pride. My pride will take you down every time. How did the World Trade Center and the Pentagon getting all blown to hell make somebody feel the need to print up 10 or 15 million Power of Pride stickers? Well, sure, there's the profit angle. I know some creep made millions off What Would Jesus Do? I like those Who Would Jesus Bomb lapel pins. When did pride get crossed off the list of deadly sins? Was that just another law passed by some old men back in the first century AD to keep the people in their place? There's no power in pride. Pride is a man who goes to war to save face. And pride is a man who cannot tell the truth that might make him look weak. There's no power in pride. Our sin is pride, and we know it. We just can't bear to talk about it. We paste those stickers right next to the Jesus fish we bought down at the Christian store. And I'm not bashing Jesus, but how about we read what Jesus said for once? I say for balance, we take in a little Buddha and Johnny Cash. America is the land of the free on paper, my friend. There's still hope because we've yet to reach the promised land. We have lots of work to do, sisters and brothers, and pride will only set us back. There's no power in pride. Pride will take you down every time. Take you down every time.
It's Tuesday, October 31. Boo, 2017.
Why sign a contract that would have this kind of language in there? How does that serve the people of Puerto Rico and the American people?
Puerto Rico cancels controversial grid repair contract.
Currently, at last check, more than 1 million people across seven states without electricity.
Tropical storm Philippe knocks out power on the mainland in seven northeastern states. Global CO2 jumps to the highest level in more than 3 million years. Plus,
we need to not rebuild as is, but put a new 21st century grid system in there.
House Republicans may support resilient electric grids. Just don't mention climate change.
I won't say a word. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You just don't have time tonight to litigate whether extreme weather events are exacerbated by climate change. So for now, let's just say
they are.
Yeah, they just definitely are.
This is your Green News Report.
It is a complicated issue, and we may not have definitive proof until the late 1980s.
Okay, Desi Doyen, you say global CO2 is the highest it's been in 3 million years, but
yeah.
I thought CO2 emissions had leveled off and were even falling.
Our annual CO2 emissions are leveling off, but with El Nino, global CO2 levels of atmospheric carbon dioxide have jumped at a record rate since last year to 403 parts per million. That's a level that's not been seen in at least 3 million years, according to the United Nations World Meteorological Organization. They warned Monday that the last time CO2 levels were this high, sea levels were up to 60 feet higher than they are today.
I thought you weren't going to mention climate change.
Power was knocked out to more than 1.5 million people across 7 states in the Northeast after a powerful punch from Tropical Storm Philippe on Sunday, with hurricane-force winds that knocked down overhead power lines, which again raises the question of whether the U.S. should be burying power lines like Germany does. It is more costly up front, but the U.S. spends way more than Germany does every year on economic losses from power outages and electric grid system repairs.
Tropical Storm Philippe, when the hell is this year's hurricane season going to be over?
Not till the end of November.
Oh, great.
Speaking of which, in Puerto Rico, the state-run electric utility PREPA announced on Sunday it will cancel a massive no-bid $300 million contract to repair the island's battered electric grid that was granted to a tiny, politically well-connected Montana company, Whitefish Energy. Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo Rossello welcomed the cancellation of the contract amid growing controversy in a Sunday press conference, calling it a distraction that is delaying the recovery.
It's interfering with everything, and it doesn't go towards the best interest of the people of Puerto Rico.
The contracting process, unusually high costs, and highly irregular contract provisions drew scrutiny, like a provision explicitly blocking government audits or reviews of the costs or profits in the contract. The contract is now the focus of multiple investigations in the Department of Homeland Security, in Congress, and reportedly also an FBI inquiry.
Good.
Governor Rossello has now activated mutual aid agreements with mainland states for grid repair crews and equipment. Puerto Rico's economy has ground to a halt. It has been 6 weeks since Hurricane Maria struck. 70% of Puerto Ricans still lack electricity, and more than 20% still don't have reliable, clean drinking water. But some good news, solar energy company Tesla's first microgrid system in Puerto Rico is now up and running at a children's hospital. The system combines solar panels and a large-scale battery and generates all of the hospital's power needs without the grid.
Day and night.
Exactly. It's one of several small renewable energy and battery-based projects being deployed on the island during rebuilding of the main power grid. And finally, it may be dawning on congressional Republicans that Congress could require updating the island's infrastructure for resiliency against future record hurricanes and also to save money. Here's Republican House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy on Fox Business Network on Sunday.
When we go back and make investments here, we should prepare ourselves that there'll be a future hurricane sometime in the future. It's happened before and it'll happen again, but we should prepare ourselves so we're not repaying the exact same thing.
Just don't mention climate change.
I still won't say a word, even though it is the fifth anniversary of Superstorm Sandy, which is starting to look a hell of a lot like Tropical Storm Philippe that just rolled through town. For much more on all of these reports and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyne.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Sandy, can't you see I'm in misery? Made a start, now we're apart.
Sandy! Yeah, Ferg does that much better than I do. He's got it down to a science. It is 27 minutes past the hour, almost to the halfway point of this Titanic Tuesday Halloween edition of The Horn. And by the way, just a quick program note for anybody who didn't catch it last night. Next week, no program Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Just a gentle reminder. I'm off to D.C. again. Some of the work that we did on the last trip, second week of this month, has borne fruit. And there's going to be a briefing for House staff on the suppressed science relating to mountaintop removal and what it does to poison innocent people who live near it. So that's what's going on. And last I checked, we are going to be allowed to video stream it. So we'll have several different means of finding it. I'll tweet, et cetera, and let folks know where to go and find it and hear the actual scientists who know what's being done to hillbillies for nothing but profit. Yes. Okay, let's, at the halfway point of the program, let's run over and check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
Hello, Bob. How are you? Happy Halloween.
And a big boo to you too.
Thank you. Thank you. So I was sitting here listening to the filibuster.
See.
And your description of General Kelly's Robert E. Lee nonsense and Sarah Huckabee Sanders' explanation of General Kelly's Robert E. Lee nonsense. I'm thinking perhaps now is the propitious time for the for Trump, his minions, and his many, many followers to do a rewrite on that Lee Greenwood tune that they've adopted as their unofficial alternate national
anthem. Would you be
anthem.
Talking about a reboot called God Bless the CSA?
Yeah, but you know, they've got to change not only the title but the lyrics. You know, and rhythmically it fits. I'm proud to be a Confederate, where at least I know I'm white, free. So get to work on that, you crazy bastards.
We will. We'll get. Yeah.
Not you, but the crazy Trump bastards.
Yeah, let's see. And I'm proud to be a Confederate, where the wrong folks still ain't free.
There you go.
And I'll never forget all the traitors. Okay, yeah.
Let them do the heavy lifting.
Absolutely. That's not work for doing on the fly.
I didn't like the song as it stood. You know, I mean. Jesus, every time I hear it, it has that same effect on me as Amazing Grace on the fucking bagpipes. Jesus, stop doing that.
I know.
But anyway.
Yeah, you mentioned bagpipes, and that calls up that great old chestnut joke, the punchline to which is, play it! If I can get his pajamas off, I'm going to fuck it!
Yeah. Speaking of bagpipes,
do you know that joke?
It seems to me.
Guy walks into a bar with an octopus. And says, "Yeah, for a beer. If you'll, I'll bet you a beer." Says to the bartender, "I'll bet you a beer. the band's equipment's all sitting over there in the corner. I'll bet you for a beer, my octopus can play that guitar. Bartender says, well, you're on. And so the guy sets his octopus down over by the guitar. The octopus sort of, in his octopus way, wraps himself around the guitar and begins, you know, because he's got lots to work with there, begins playing that guitar better than Segovia. I mean, he's just all up and down the neck and all those tentacles just working the strings. And the bartender's like, well, here's your beer, buddy. Guy finishes off his beer and says, for another beer, I'll bet you my octopus can play the piano. So another beer gets set up. The octopus goes over and plays the piano. And I've already told the punchline, so we know where this is going. And the bartender says, all right, because it's an Irish bar. All right, okay, you think you're so hot with your musical octopus? Have him play that, and points to the bagpipes. And the guy sets his octopus down to the bagpipes, and the octopus kind of feels it and runs its tentacles over it and everything and backs off. And, you know, octopi are very, very smart animals. And you know, takes one of his little tentacles and rubs his little cephalopod head. And he seems perplexed. And the guy looks at him and says, go on, play it. And the octopus turns to him and says, play it. If I can get his pajamas off, I'm going to fuck it.
There you go.
I'm going to go through all that. I get at least a low-grade cowbell.
Oh, definitely.
Sorry, but you mentioned bagpipes, and well, then everything went to hell, didn't it?
No, I don't know. Well, I was just saying that there are certain songs anymore that they have been done to death or overdone or underdone, and I just, you know, it's the distinction between an oh wow song on the radio and the opposite of an oh wow song. An oh wow song is one that's not played a lot, and when it comes on the radio, you crank up the volume and say, oh wow.
Yeah, you're kind of glad to hear it. I haven't heard. Oh yeah. Yeah, no, I know that. Yeah.
Oh. And then there's any song ever performed by Air Supply, okay?
There are a few that go in that category, Air Supply, REO Speedwagon. You know, that especially ballads by REO Speedwagon, went running through the door, tripped, fell upon the floor, and I'm never, that just make you go, oh, fuck, and you either change the channel or just turn the radio off altogether.
And what is that other ballad, I guess, from the 80s, and there's a line in there, something about making love in the frozen peas or something, and I want to say it's Bob Seger, but it may not be.
Are you talking about another Auld Lang Syne?
Yeah.
My old lover in the grocery store. The snow was falling Christmas Eve. We did it like walruses in the frozen peas.
Yeah, there that one. Go. Yeah.
And see, it's not that there's anything inherently wrong with adult contemporary music. But having spent many years slaving over a hot turntable in the 80s playing this stuff, there comes a time when you just can't take another note.
I get it. A million years ago, we did a bit, and I haven't thought about this in years. It was a fake PSA that me and some of my compadres came up with. DJ abuse is a terrible thing. And we had people, because if you've ever worked live and you've taken requests, call the request line now, 1-800-WE-SUCK, 1-800-WE-SUCK-RADIO, call out. And you get, and I'm not making fun, because it's, but you get these kids, and the song just got hooked, this is back when radio was real.
Yeah.
And the song would just get stuck in their brain, and they got to hear it, and they haven't heard it. They haven't heard it in at least 30 minutes, because it's on the hot rotation on your playlist, so it's getting played every 30 to 45 minutes, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not
rotation.
It's not enough, okay?
Yeah.
Will you please play Beth by Kiss and dedicate it to my cousin Beth? I think about her all the time.
It's like one of those things you should be able to file workers' comp for, Scott.
Yeah.
Because at 6 o'clock in the morning when the midnight shift is over, you just go stumbling out into the morning light, and you hiss a little bit like Nosferatu, right? It's Halloween.
Yeah.
and all you can, and you just, I can't go back again tonight. I'll do anything. I'll work anywhere. I can't take the request line anymore.
Well, the one station in Kansas City where I was for like 5 years, mostly part-time, but the last year or so was full-time on the old overnight shift, we had the best engineer that you could ever want in a radio station. I mean, he knew his stuff. You know, some stations are thrown together with, you know, with a lick and a prayer, so to speak. But this guy, I mean, he engineered the hell out of that station and maintained the equipment and all of that. And all of our music, virtually all of it, until CDs came along, was on cartridges, tape carts. And he would embed a tone.
Oh, yeah, to kick the next cart.
No. Well, we couldn't do that. I know some stations can do that, but the way he had it set up, he had four lights in a fixture, a four light bulb fixture on the ceiling above the clock in the studio. And when the first inaudible tone triggered, it would make the green light, or the, I forget which light, but one colored light would light up. So that if you weren't paying attention, you had your monitor down, you would see that you had 30 seconds to go. Okay?
No, I get it. Well, no, yeah, I absolutely,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there was another tone which would mark 10 seconds and trigger a different colored light. And then when there were like 3 seconds, there was a brilliant orange light that would flash, okay? And it was great because I know the beginning and the end of virtually every adult contemporary song on the playlist from the 80s.
How many shifts did you do with the monitor completely turned down so you wouldn't have to hear the dreck?
I used to have these open-air Sennheisers. I forget the model number.
We all did, with the yellow earpieces.
Yeah, but I had blue ones. I had the guy special order me some dark blue ones. And I would go into the song, turn the studio monitor down, and keep the Sennheisers up to the barely discernible, the lowest discernible level that I possibly could. And between that, just barely hearing where the tune was, and the cue lights, I managed to survive. I call adult contemporary music codependency rock because it's some of the weepiest, sappiest, saddest.
There's some pretty creepy shit in there too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Hoghead in the chat room wants to know what station you were on in KC, Scott.
From 82 to 87, I guess it was. I was on KLSI 93.3 FM.
Okay, wait. Okay, give me the KLSI voice. Give me the liner. Give me the liner.
Well, it changed from time to time, but it was actually if you KLSI phonetically is classy, and for a long time we were classy 93. Going up against our main competitor down the dial, KUDL, which was Cuddle, okay? And did I ever
and
tell
that
you
was
the story?
And that was Trashy 98, right?
No. It was Cuddle, KUDL.
I know, but you said classy, trashy, never mind.
No. Well, the station originally, when I got to Kansas City, was a religious station, owned by Jimmy Swaggart. And I guess he had to sell it for legal fees or something, you know, to defend himself.
We've all had our brushes with greatness, absolutely. You know, I started a gospel radio station. Played a lot of Jimmy Swaggart, as a matter of fact.
But anyway, he sold the station, and the company that bought it was based in Ohio somewhere, up near Cleveland. Sandusky was the name of the station, so it might have been Sandusky, Ohio. But anyway, they brought in a whole new crew, upgraded the equipment, and launched the station as adult contemporary in about oh, I don't know, May of 82, okay? And then in July, we changed the letters from KWKI.
Quickie.
Which is what, quickie, yeah, have a quickie for Jesus. See, it all fits. But anyway, we changed the call letters from KWKI to KLSI, okay? And went from literally nowhere in the ratings, and within a couple of rating periods, we were like neck and neck, and sometimes even beating in certain day parts KUDL, which was our main competitor. And I think Limbaugh worked there at one time at Cuddle.
Bastards.
But anyway, that I was there, and then they brought in a new program director in early 87, and he decided
You've evaded my question.
Oh, no. My radio voice is pretty much along the lines of what you hear now.
I know, but you still have to do the liner, or it's not real.
I'm trying to think. What at the end, it was the positioning statement was number one for music and fun, which was the brainchild of this new idiot program director who programmed the place from a bar stool at a joint around the corner, literally, and took it
That's why he rose all the way to program director.
Oh, yes, yes. And this guy...
Number one managed, for music and fun, classy, 93.
It wasn't pukey at all. It was warm,
damn.
It was friendly.
Oh, wait, number one for music and fun, we're classy, 93.
No, a little bit more upbeat. It was number one for music and fun, KLSI, classy, 93.
See, I finally got it out of you.
Okay, well, I'm so out of practice with that old radio stuff. But anyway, long story short, the new program director came in, basically got rid of anyone worth listening to, okay, and took the station right into the toilet. So,
well, it was making too much money.
No, I don't think it was that. I was thinking that. Well, maybe it was that. You know, the owners needed a tax deduction.
You gotta have, if you own several stations, you got to have a loss leader.
Yeah, but that was a piss poor choice of stations for that device, because the station literally, in the course of less than a year, went from nowhere to quite respectable and competitive ratings. And we used to have. We, at one time, ran a 20-minute promo, which basically was comprised of all the different promotions that we had done over the course of the first couple of years. A 20-minute fucking promo.
That's an infomercial.
We would get requests from listeners to play the 20-minute promo. It was I've never worked at a radio station like this in my life. The people who ran it knew what the hell they were doing, and one of the first promotions that they did was KLSI, the radio station you're building, and they set up an answering machine, let the listeners call in with ideas to make the station the best in town, and we would incorporate some of these ideas. The voice of the listeners giving the ideas into promos. It was an incredible station that went straight to hell when the new guy came in.
Well, you have triggered something here. Of course, this often happens when we talk.
Okay.
there are people reliving the horror their radio earworm ballad horrors now. Let's see, Larry. I got a note from Larry. Can't forget the. My baby takes the morning train song. I bet Scott spun that one a million times.
Oh, yes.
Of course, your music was on carts. I was going to say, spun the grooves right off the vinyl.
Yeah.
I never heard that. Are you kidding me, Larry? He says,
what,
then there was
a train?
No, different song. Then there was a 1981 rarely heard gem like this that if I ever heard in the car, we would crank it up. He said, I doubt you've ever even heard this one, but our local station played it on a rare occasion. I love that song. Diesel, Sausalito Summer Night, by another Dutch band that couldn't speak English but were handed lyrics and told to pronounce them as best they could. And yeah, it's upbeat and perky and peppy, and it came out at about the same time that the Police, the Black Album with their digital faces on it. Which album was that? They came out at roughly the same time. Sausalito Summer Night. Oh, I remember that song very well.
It must have been a regional tune if he was up in the Bay Area.
Oh, well, it's not a regional tune. It's a Dutch band.
Okay.
Just like James just wrote in two words, Radar Love. Been driving all night, my hands wet on the wheel. And the world's most patient drummer. He does that for he does that same lick for like 6 minutes.
Yeah.
When he finally gets to cut loose. That's one of them too. Brother Deacon Asa, flush from his success with our evening's promotion, speaking of promotions, of Pernicious Pumpkin, says, what about Turn the Page? Oh, fuck, Turn the Page. Turn the Page.
I don't know that one.
Yo, Bob Seger. Everybody got all... I got out to college in Missouri, and that song just got everybody all wistful. Long and lonely, because it was mostly a bunch of kids from the Midwest and homesick and shit like that. And on a long and lonely journey east of Omaha, I'm down to peanut butter crackers and I'm pining for my ma.
It might have been a little too country.
No, Bob Seger. No, it's a rock and roll song.
Well, it sounds awfully country lyrics.
But it's a ballad. It's a ballad about how awful it is to be traveling the country in a tour bus, making a small fucking fortune from people showing up at arenas to watch you play music about how much you hate being on the road making music and money.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, another thing is with KLSI, the station kind of evolved in steps and stages. For the first couple of years, it was more of a soft adult contemporary. And then with the departure of the original program director, they started monkeying with it. And then that program director went away. But the best guy there that I ever worked for was in roughly the last year that I was there. His name was Bill Bailey. He was a black guy. And among other places, had worked at WLS in Chicago about 40-some years ago, briefly, and worked in Oklahoma City and a bunch of other places, and had a voice that made James Earl Jones sound wimpy. I mean, just had the fucking ballsiest voice that you'd ever want to hear. But that guy taught me more about doing great radio than anybody I ever encountered before or since. And he died a couple of years ago, I'm sad to say, at a rather young age. But God, he knew his stuff. And as you might expect, management got rid of him too,
Oh, toot sweet, and absolutely.
And that's when they brought in the Barstool programmer. That ultimately killed the station and ended my association with it. But who was asking about where I worked in Kansas City? Because there are a couple of other stations.
Okay. Well, by the way, that was I just got a little piece of trivia, Scott.
Uh-huh.
Mentioned Radar Love. Golden Earring, according to Ron and Raleigh, is the longest-running rock band still performing. They beat the Stones by 1 year.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
But anyway, to answer whoever was asking of my Kansas City radio work.
That was Hoghead.
Okay, after KLSI, it was a week before my birthday in 87 when they canned me, the radio, the business with a heart. And I landed over at K-Lite 106.5, which was definitely soft adult contemporary. and the emphasis on the music and not so much personality. And I was there for a couple of years and then ended up doing weekends and fill-ins on AM on KMBZ, which was back then a combination AC music with some oldies thrown in, a few new songs, heavy news department, heavy sports department, and even talk in the late hours and the wee hours of the morning. And then I was out of radio for, God, the better part of, well, with a couple of quick exceptions, the better part of 6 or 7 years. And my last work was in Cincinnati at a jazz station almost 20 years ago.
Booger. Sorry, you say Cincinnati in radio, you have to say booger. Mark with a note.
Yeah.
Cutting right to the heart of the matter for anybody who's ever jocked in the South. Subject line songs. Hey Bob, what about Freebird? Hell yeah!
Woo! Woo! Freebird! Woo!
Why don't y'all ever play the 19-minute version? Oh, Jesus Christ. You were guaranteed, depending on where you were working, you'd get two or three, especially if you worked Friday or Saturday night in the overnights, you'd get two or three Freebird. Hey, man, I just want you to play Freebird for me and my old lady. Those were the days. Yeah.
The listeners, you know, in my career have by and large been wonderful, with the exception of a few certifiably crazy women. I won't even say they were groupies. There was some category that is even stranger than groupies.
A couple of things. Just a couple of things. One, it's just bizarre, Scott. The things that turn into triggering conversations on this program. Essie, 7:51 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time in the chat room. Bob, you're killing me. I was a DJ from 93 to 2002. Oh, shit. We started as soft favorites. Wait a minute. We started as soft favorites and flipped to top 40. Last station I was at was classic rock. From Kenny G to Seeger, I played it all. And I knew how to splice tape. Great times, yeah. Splice tape. Okay, for the young people out there, who get really, really frustrated when they just don't get quite the mouse sensitivity that they need as they're trying to find that last little goddamn proton of noise in the diagram in their audio editing suite on their computers. Well, once upon a time, children, there was this stuff called tape, magnetic tape, and it wasn't sticky or anything, but it had music on it, and sometimes speech, and you had a thing called a chopping block, and the tape laid firmly in the block, and you had to play the thing on the reel-to-reel. You had to, whatever it was you were editing, you'd play it, and then you had to take a China marker and make a mark on the tape right when the noise you wanted to cut out got on top of the playback head. This, of course, presumes that you knew which one was the playback head and not the record head. So then you spooled out the tape, and you had to know what speed your tape was running at. Was it running at 15 inches per second or 7, or it, we just don't really know. And then you'd have to mark it on one end and then across the playback head with the pot turned up so you could hear the, and then you'd mark the other end and you'd cut them on the bias and you'd stick them together, and then you'd use editing tape to get them glued together, babies. And that's called editing tape.
Yeah, used a single-edged razor blade to do that.
And radio stations had lots of single-edged razor blades, kind of had a little handle on the other side so you wouldn't hurt yourself. And that's probably why there were a lot of DJs who fell into the devil's snowdrift. And you know.
Yeah, because of the razor blades.
Yeah. Hey, are we out of razor blades? Help. Yeah, we're going through a lot of those these days. Don't know why. Don't see a lot of tape in the bin there. No, you don't, do you?
The one and only time, Bob, that I ever tried, or at least the first time that I tried cocaine, the lady that was on before me used to have her friends visit. She did the Love Songs and Dedications program, okay? And then I'd amble in about midnight or one, depending on the time of year, to do my overnight extravaganza. And I always tried to get there about 20 minutes early to get my first hour of music pulled together and, you know, all that shit, because I hate to rush, okay? But anyway, her friend, whose name I have long since forgotten, said, "Would you like a hit of coke?" And I, being the adventurous lad that I've always been, said, "Sure, what the hell?" And he had this thing that it was in, like, a, you know, those inhalers that they used to sell
if you had a head cold? Yeah.
All right, it was a metal inhaler like that, and apparently the coke was in that. And you'd put it in your nose and give yourself a good snort.
Oh, yeah. You turn the little thingy at the top and you... Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this,
it's a one-hitter.
This coke, to quote a line from a Monty Python bit, had a kick on it like an Aborigine's armpit. Okay? I had done uppers like Black Beauties before, but I'd never done coke before. And I knew immediately to stay away from that stuff. Because given my addictive personality, I knew that I would get hooked if I let myself. But somewhere around here in a box, I've got a cassette tape that has the air check from that morning. And I was running like an 8-day clock.
Wired up.
Wound up.
Well, there's a reason jocks love it.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I'm completely decaffeinated. I can't cope with caffeine or any sort of stimulant. I can't take decongestants when I get all, you know, clogged up and everything, because it just makes my heart run away. And so that's why I'm kind of, well, I forget who it was. I saw somebody posted a comment on something I put on Facebook. Said, I listen to Malloy and Kincaid at 1.5 speed now. When I slow Kincaid back down to normal speed, he sounds drunk. And well, I can believe that. Let's see. Let's check in. Darcy says, "Freebird, they never yell Fred Bear." Okay. and oh, this is good. We got to work with this note coming in from Marcy, from Lick the Lithuanian fame. Well, Horn Community, you asked for it, so here it is. Feel free to edit on the fly or otherwise. All right. Halloween is probably... I mean, I can get away with singing on Halloween, can't I?
Sure, why not?
Well, I'm proud to be a Confederate where the brown folks still ain't free. And I won't forget the traitors that died to give that life to me. And I'd gladly burn a cross next to you and defend them still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love the Klan. God bless the CSA. From the Klan in Mississippi to the bigots in Arkansas. Across the plains of Texas to Stone Mountain in Georgia. From Richmond down to Savannah and Jamestown to San Antonio. Well, there's pride in every racist's heart, and it's time we sent them home. And I'm proud to be a Confederate where the brown folks still ain't free, etc. That's damn, Marcy, damn.
Definitely.
Marcy says, I'm a fan of parodying lyrics. This is about the fastest I've ever made one, though. I'm also desperately trying to keep these damn earworms off me. Thanks!
Yeah, there you go.
Earworms are horrible.
Sorry I started that aspect, because...
I suspect that's not even why you called.
Well, no, actually it's not, but I love these little diversions that we sometimes have. Okay, well, I can go into it if you want to, because it is kind of a serious thought that I had just the other night. Have you been following the release of the JFK documents at all?
Some, but I had so little hope for it that I really it I guess I'm saying it hasn't been a priority for me.
Yeah, well, I've been kind of
I know how it ends.
For the past week, I mean, in terms of listening, and I won't even go into what that's all about, mainly because it has nothing to do with anything except getting diverted by other shit on this end. But to refresh the memories of anybody who can't remember what the hell happened last week, because stuff does happen fast and furious in today's world, boys and girls. I mean, just when you think that it used to be, you know, programs get your programs. You can't tell one player from another without your program.
Oh, I saw a reference by Charlie Pierce the other day. Yeah. I'm such a fan. He described the last 10 months as being, and I guess it's an old saying. I don't know why. I'd never run across it. He described the last 10 months as being like being a fireman in hell. No weekends off, no downtime.
Yeah.
Just constantly battling the blazes.
Well, I mean, the thing used to be programs get your programs. You can't tell one player from another without a program. But in today's environment, the ink doesn't even have time to dry before everything changes and you've got to rewrite the lineup.
And you know, I mean, look, that's by design.
I know.
You know, given that I've been at this for actually more than 13 years. And certainly I was, you know, the time I spent at CNN, you know, that's an 8-hour shift and you're just sitting and watching it all happen in real time. And even that, I mean, even, and that, you know, you had to, that there, you had to crank out there is more typing involved in a 5-minute newscast than most people realize.
Well, yes, yes.
And you had to keep up with it. And so you're constantly reading, constantly writing, constantly editing. And you get pretty good at doing it on the fly. And it will make a writer out of you, whether you like it or not. And it'll make a damn,
well,
make
no
a damn fine
I mean...
it make a damn fine typist out of you too. But even then, and through the reign of error and the Obama administration, you know, we understand what the 24-hour news cycle is, but this is not that. This is a deliberate attempt to keep everybody off base all the time so that you can never get, because, you know, if you're a boxer and you're back on your heels, odds are the other guy's going to get through and you're going to take one on the chin pretty quick. And we can't get our feet planted, Scott.
It's a 24/7 news cycle. It's like, you know, all news all the time, literally, or at least what passes for news, you know? I mean, on the Westinghouse news stations back in the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s, the motto was, give us 22 minutes and we'll give you the world. WINS New York, okay? Now it's like in the next 22-minute cycle, everything can and usually does change in some dramatic way. And there's no time to take it in and process it, and do give some thought to make
justice by it, right? No.
Well, and to make out what the hell's happening and what it means and how it fits, you know. And truth be damned, I mean, truth is for sissies in the minds of a lot of people today, and they would prefer it that way. You know why? The other night, last night with the indictment of Manafort, I looked at the Netflix documentary, "Get Me Roger Stone," and for anybody who needs a refresher course on Manafort's history,
it's all right there.
Definitely.
That documentary is the perfect primer for anybody who wants a quick and dirty understanding of how we got here.
And the Sarah Huckabee Sanders and all Trump's minions and Trump himself in his magic tweet box, when that story came down, have said, well, you know, all this stuff happened before he was the campaign director of the 2016 Trump campaign, which he was for just a limited time, and he wasn't all that important. Bullshit. I mean, that's not much of an excuse, because if it all happened before he came on board, if you knew about it, that's all the more reason not to bring him on board, unless that's what you wanted to have happen. Put a guy in, Roger Stone's evil twin. But if you haven't seen that, people, watch that documentary, because it'll make you mad, but it'll also show you just what scum are running things in the Trump administration. And tonight's the perfect night to say this. The Trump administration is showing itself to be the flaming paper bag of dog excrement on our national doorstep. That's where we are, boys and girls.
That is a damn fine metaphor.
Thank you. And
Randy and PA just offering a little bit of pushback. It's not a 24-hour. It's not a 24/7 news cycle. The news stories repeat every 2 hours or so. And there's some truth in that. But the only way you really get any peace is if you make your awake time, say midnight to 6, and your bedtime 9 to 4. Because from the moment that Washington D.C. and New York and wherever the shooter is on any given day wake up, it's game on. See, I mean, just as an example, I come up with a list every evening of stuff I want to talk about. And it's my fault if I don't get to it, okay? But I also like to talk about what y'all want to talk about. But it's my fault if I get hung up on something and it turns into a giant filibobster. So I had a story courtesy of Trey in Kentucky, Stan, over the weekend. Granny took her little grandson with her to church on Sunday. You know, these sorts of things happen in places like Kentucky. You go to church with your gammy. And on the way back, he blew her brains out.
Oh, geez, how old was he yet?
Maybe he's 10 or I don't know, little kid. Hold on, let me find it. I got it here.
Jesus.
Okay, I'll find it here in a second. But the gun was in the car, and because you gotta have a freedom protector in your car, because you never know when some sissy liberal Sharia Muslim transgendered ACLU lesbian's gonna come after you. Somerset, Kentucky woman, and of course, there are people that know this story upside down, backwards, and sideways, because we've got correspondents in Somerset, Kentucky. A grandchild accidentally shot and killed his grandmother in a tragic accident, sheriff's officials confirm. The coroner has identified the victim as 68-year-old Yuta Phillips, that's E-U-T-T-A, Phelps, not Phillips, Yuta Phelps. A relative tells us Phelps' grandson got a hold of a loaded gun as she drove them home from church Wednesday on Highway 1003. They say the gun somehow went off and struck Phelps. Preliminary investigation indicates that one of Ms. Phelps' grandsons was operating a 2015 Chevrolet owned by Ms. Phelps. Two of her other grandsons, both juveniles, were in the back seat examining a handgun that had been left in the back seat. A 12-year-old male discharged the firearm, striking Ms. Phelps, who was sitting in the front passenger seat. The children's father told Lex 18 that he just wants his children to understand that this incident was not their fault and that it was only a tragic accident. My favorite line out of that is, and the gun somehow went off.
Yeah, but whose gun was it, and why was it in proximity to a fucking 12-year-old?
Sure. Well, no, I mean, who's? Well, it's probably grandma's gun, or maybe it was the older, maybe it was the older brother's gun. But they're driving her car, right? So you got your freedom protector there under the seat, and you accelerate coming out of the stoplight there, because and the gun slides into the back seat, and little Cletus and little Doofer, look, it's Gammy's gun. Because you know, Kentucky, she probably knows how to handle a firearm, and she never knew what hit her. Because the gun somehow went off. And of all the people in the world that a phrase like, I mean, it's heartbreaking to me. And the larger scope of all this is, I've had that sitting around because I wanted to bring it up, and then I get ready to go on the air with a Halloween program ready to go, and lo and behold, some assholes yelled Aloha Snack Bar in Midtown Manhattan and you know, run over people in the bike lane, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah.
And so it all just goes to hell. You can't get your, you know, like a boxer, you can't get your feet planted underneath you, and so you're constantly off.
I tell you the truth, Bob. Anymore in the last week or so, I've made a conscious effort. When I'll get up in the morning, have the first cup of coffee, give Punky his food, you know, make sure the cat has got her food and water. And I'll crank up MSNBC or CNN, and I'll watch it for, you know, use that old Westinghouse news channel thing, 22 minutes. I'll watch it for 22 minutes, and if no mention is made of Trump being impeached or stepping down, I'll turn it off and listen to something else, music or Mark Maron's wonderful podcast, WTF, or something on YouTube. An old To Tell the Truth episode. Jesus, I mean, because it's not that I try to avoid what's going on in the world. I just, for my own personal sanity, I sometimes have to step away from it, simply because.
No, it's like substance abuse. Now you gotta take it. You gotta put it down, and you gotta get clean. I mean, yeah. I'm telling you, I'm not kidding. For those precious few days that Agnes and I got away in August,
mm-hmm.
I didn't turn on National Petroleum Radio or anything in the afternoon when we were driving. I didn't watch the news. Shit, I barely watched any television. But it's there's seepage, because there's always a television on somewhere in this country, wherever you walk in. I mean, imagine...
Yeah, usually set to Fox.
You know, imagine walking into the TV, the electronics department of Walmart or Target or whatever, and there's 50 reproductions of Brian Kilmeade's head yakking at you.
There's a horrible
Halloween song. This is the stuff of which nightmares are made.
Yeah.
But it's hard to get free of it. And I remember just, and I broke down and got pulled the news, put the news back on when the Charlottesville stuff broke as we were coming home. And I was like, God damn, well, I know what the program's going to be about when we get home. And that's when Agnes looked at me and went, vacation's over, isn't it, honey? And I said, it goddamn sure is.
Well, and to be clear, this isn't to say that I don't stay aware of what the hell's going on. But case in point, this business of the guy in the Home Depot truck storming down the bike path, knocking over whoever he could, and shouting God is great or whatever the hell he shouted, if he did, okay? I mean, first of all, as the story's unfolding, they know less than what they know, okay? But yet they continue prattling on, you know, vamping till ready, all right? And really, if there's nothing new to add to the story, or if it's a rehash, you know, if it's the 25th incarnation of something else we've seen here or abroad, it's like there's no benefit. Let me wait a day and find out, once some time and some analysis has been put to it, you know, to figure, because it doesn't behoove me to sit here hour after hour with the same 14 points and nothing new being added to it. I mean, it just, you know, it just doesn't work for me anymore. But anyway, before the time goes completely away, and I know you want to make room for somebody else, let me run down this quick thought that I had about these JFK documents.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I ran this past a researcher friend of mine, and he said, well, I'll tell you what he said after I relate it. Okay, last Thursday, the final batch of JFK documents were scheduled for release. 2,800 were released, leaving a couple of hundred that weren't, okay? Now, the rationale behind that was the FBI and the CIA needed to go over them again, even though they had 25 fucking years. Everybody knew when the deadline was to do this. But now they have 180 days to comb through them, redact what they need to or say they need to, and then release them in April of 2018, 6 months from now. Now, I got to thinking about that, and I said, well, what good purpose could come from that? We know what the nefarious purpose might be, but what good purpose could come from that? And it dawned on me that in a weird way, this works, but only in the sense if there's some long secret Soviet angle in connection with the events of November 22nd, 1963. Now, by that, I don't mean that Oswald was a Soviet agent. I don't mean that at all. But just something that's been held under lock and key for 54 years that we didn't know but could know once these documents see the light of day. So put a bookmark there. Now, my thinking basically has to do with the current occupant of the White House and whatever machinations were undertaken by Russia to help put him there. Now, Putin, who's in charge over in Russia, his background in Soviet and then later Russian intelligence is indisputable. It's undeniable. He's a spook, okay? He, you got to think, was as aware as anybody in the U.S. of the pending deadline of October 26, 2017 for the JFK document dump. So you got to figure he knew it was coming up. Now, you got to figure that he further knew, or if he further knew, that there was some Soviet angle in connection with what happened in November 22, 1963. He wouldn't want that to be made more widely known, okay? So if that's true, he would want his guy, that is to say Trump, someone who owes him one, in the top job over here, okay? So put a bookmark there. Meanwhile, Trump okays the release of most of the JFK documents last week as scheduled so as not to arouse suspicion, holding back about 200 of the documents. Now, it's already been established, I think, that he's no real friend of the CIA, okay? But he's saying that they chose to block whatever bombshell documents that there were to be released for at least a time. Okay, well, why is that? I'm thinking that they are thinking, that is, the CIA is thinking, that the timing is not currently right for those documents to be released yet. Think back to Watergate, and I don't know if you've heard this or not, but there were some schools of thought that suggested that certain CIA operatives essentially botched the break-in at Democratic National Headquarters in order to bring Nixon down. And you got to remember, in the summer of 72, it was less than 10 years after JFK was shot down in the streets of Dallas. So that was close enough in the national memory that actual assassination by the CIA was kind of frowned upon as a technique to get someone out of the way. So they did a character assassination, if you will. Okay, so by the CIA requesting that the incriminating documents be held back for 6 months and then allowing them to be released, essentially intact, this could very well hurt Trump in the 2018 midterm elections later next year, provided that the held-back documents actually indicate a Soviet angle of some sort in 63, and now that we know also that Trump is Putin's apologist slash patsy. So to sum it up, there may be nothing at all to these musings, but then again, my experience has been the JFK case has repeatedly shown itself to be chock-a-block loaded with twists and turns and all manner of surprises, so no wild development can really be automatically dismissed. So I ran this by a researcher friend of mine, and he said his comments were great musings. Because I really let myself go. I said, you know, I played what if with a couple of aspects of this whole document dump. And maybe, like I say, there's nothing to it, but there might be something to it. At least it's worthy of discussion, you know, among the researchers and the experts on the case. So there you go. That's my little take on the document dump last week.
Well, if things slow down, I'll have a chance to dig into it. I don't know if they ever are.
And by the way, the National Archives, who were in charge of releasing the documents, they could have saved everybody a fat-ass headache by putting a search feature. I don't know if you've looked at the website. I'll send you the link so you can give a look to it, because it has links for every one of the 2,800 documents that were released in PDF form. But it's like, if I wanted to find out what John L. Smith had to do with the assassination case, I couldn't simply type in John L. Smith in a search box. I would have to look through all of the 28 fucking documents to find out if John L. Smith is mentioned, you know, which is not at all helpful if you want to find out what's going on. And that may be the whole point, you know. Just because the law said that these documents will be released, well, shit, that doesn't mean that we've got to make finding out what's in them easy for you. Now, does it? You know? So, anyway, that's... And I never thought I would see this day come, to tell you the truth, because when the Warren Commission concluded its activities in 64, all of these documents were scheduled for release 75 years hence, which is to say the year 2039. So to the extent that anything worthwhile is being released, we are fortunate in the sense that we're young enough to have the energy, you know, a little ahead of schedule to look at the stuff now, as opposed to, hell, 2039. I don't know how old I'll be, but I'll probably be up in my 80s by that time. Well, more than my 80s. But anyway, that's, you know, take a look at and read up on some of the stuff that they're writing about. Because there is information in these documents. These should not be totally discounted. But there's even more good stuff in the 200 documents that didn't get released. Not only what's in them, but the reasons that they are
right. Well,
we presume
that to be the case because they weren't released.
Well, some of the things that we've been looking for are Oswald's tax records, with the feeling being that he was a paid informant, at least for the FBI, and might have been.
You think the FBI gave him a W-2 for that?
Actually, they. I forget what the arrangement is called, but they do actually have to give you something for your taxes. But there's a certain form that, if I knew the number of the form, I could tell you, oh, yeah, that's what this is.
I had no idea.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, it's a tax-deductible income.
I got to say, though, at this point in time, as taxes go, I'm more interested in Trump's than Oswald's.
Well, yeah, but you know that Mueller has already...
I presume that Mueller's got him.
Oh, got him and gone through him, boys.
And he's working. And he's working through him.
Yeah. Well, initially, a month or so ago, at least, Trump was saying, "Now, if he goes too far afield, Trump was making noises like he was going to fire Robert Mueller.
Yeah, you can't go looking into my family business. That's out of bounds. That's off limits. He has no business looking into my dirty past or my dirty present or my dirty future.
But did you see what Mitch McConnell and some of the bigwigs in the GOP Senate did?
What?
There was a...
Oh, yeah, the blocking?
Yeah, they... normally what a president will do is once the Senate is in recess for a holiday area or a period or whatever, it was during the August recess, normally a president will do what they call a recess appointment. Well,
oh no, those are all over now.
McConnell very wisely set it up so that technically the Senate didn't go into recess.
Yeah, he came up with that little scheme when the Kenyan Muslim usurper was in office.
Well, yeah, but I mean it worked against us then, but it's working for us now because that eliminates a method whereby Trump could undo the hard work of Robert Mueller.
Right, exactly. So it remains to be seen. Well, Scott, I've enjoyed the conversation immensely.
I have, too. I always do with you, Bob, because we talk about silly stuff and also serious stuff, and that's what makes for good conversation.
Well, that's what conversation radio is all about. Right?
And one more thing, if you will, I don't know if you've had a chance to see the couple of emails that I sent. Give some serious thought to having on that JFK expert that I mentioned in connection with these documents or in connection with the anniversary next month on the 22nd, because I think there's still some interest, even on the part of the Horn family congregation, as to what happened, what was it, 54 years ago this year. Because an election was undone, and if for no other reason, we deserve to know what was behind that.
I agree.
But anyway.
I agree. I wonder if we have the attention span for it.
Well, we ought to have it, at least for a day. Once a year, we ought to focus as best we can on what happened and the fact that we were lied to going in 64. The Warren Report was the biggest work of fiction since Bambi. And to show you how crazy, and I know you want to go, but to show you how crazy it is, in 64, we had the definitive official version of what happened. And then in the late 70s, as a result of the House Assassinations Select Committee, we had a second official version, which in some ways contradicted the first official version. So we've got two official versions at war with one another all these years. And there are still leads to be followed. And even though people cannot necessarily be brought to justice, although I think there are some people still upright and above ground and breathing who were in on it in one way or another, even today, even if justice can't be done, at least let's go for having the truth be known in as far as it can be known.
Right. Of course.
I understand
everything you're saying, but if they came out with rock solid lead pipe cinch truth, facts, not truth, facts.
Mm-hmm.
If they proved beyond a reasonable doubt that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, and that it was all just something that he cooked up inside his own mind, I'd say 50% of the United States would call bullshit.
If it were conclusive, but there's already evidence in the record which shows how that is a virtual, if not practical, impossibility. And I'm not going to try to litigate.
But you also understand that if I stayed on the air for the next 6 hours, there would be people who called in who said, No, it's incontrovertible that Oswald did act alone, and the evidence supports that. I know I've got a very close friend who is an acted alone guy.
Yeah, or as we call them, a lone nutter.
I think it was Ron and Raleigh pointed out, you know, there's one dispositive way to find this out. Dig up John Connolly.
Well, yeah, because, and that whenever people say Oswald acted alone, I'd say, well, how then do you account for more lead fragments being left in John Connolly's body than are missing from the bullet that hit him? Not to mention that Oswald used a piece of shit 20-some-year-old rifle. Not to mention that the scope was misaligned. Not to mention that he was not really what you call a great shot.
Scott.
Yeah, I know.
You're litigating it.
I am. I know.
See what I mean?
What I'm saying is the assertions of the lone nutters can be countered, okay, and countered effectively because they cannot answer how more lead was left by the bullet that left the lead that is missing from the fucking bullet. That's why they call it a magic bullet, okay? But anyway, let me let you go. Otherwise, I'm going to start frothing at the mouth.
And, you know, I've had notes. Punky hates it when you do that.
Yeah, Punky's a good old boy, though.
Yeah, Punky's...
You know, I've had that bird for 20 years next month.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and he's very quiet tonight.
Yeah. Well, it's the weather changes. It was hot as hell for the better part of a week, and it's finally cooled down some. And he's sitting there looking at me like, don't talk about me, you son of a bitch. And you know he's thinking it.
Well, see, I also know that Punky knows what actually happened on November 22nd.
Well, he probably
because
does.
As Bill Hicks, and, you know, I mean, birds, you know, birds communicate. As Bill Hicks pointed out, there were anti-Castro pigeons seen drinking in bars saying coo coo. Yeah, I love that clip.
That is it. I mean that, and that I think that's the best possible note to end this conversation on, Bob.
All right, you take care, Scott.
All right, take care, man.
Bye now.
We'll see ya.
Our buddy Scott, with a surprisingly quiet Punky this evening. Okay, we'll keep things rolling here. Let's see. I'm willing to bet that this is Billable Rick. Maybe I'm wrong. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right, Bob. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I was just listening to your wonderful conversation with Scott and Punky.
Well, and happy Halloween to you.
Yes, you too. You too. I just... Yeah, I'm getting ready to watch the Dodgers game here pretty soon. We'll see what happens. I don't really.
I know
play
you're all
being able to beat Verlander.
You're all go Strohs.
Yeah, I'm joking about that actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No.
I was always raised to root for the league when it came right down to it. So.
Me too. I'm an NLer.
I'm a National League guy. They play that strange game where the pitcher doesn't have to stand to bat in the American League. It's not baseball.
Yeah, that's nuts. No, that's like designated hitter. What the hell is that?
So, it's designated baseball.
Right. What the Dodgers have going for them today is that it's not hot. The ball's not going to jump off the bat and go out of the park like the Astros have been doing, like hitting just scads of home runs. So I think the ball's going to stay in the park. That's
the way they hit.
Dodgers.
I don't think that's the weather's fault. I think that's more a function of physics and bat speed and ball speed and things that involve equations that use Greek letters.
Well, you could be right there. You could be right. I mean, although the ball, there is something about the carry effect of the baseball when it's really hot, like on,
game
one was 103 degrees at Dodger Stadium. And
my brother-in-law is a drag racer, and there is all the difference in the world between racing at sea level and racing at 1,000 feet above sea level, and high humidity and low humidity and how the engine. Oh, absolutely.
it doesn't run as well at 1,000 feet above sea level, right?
Right.
Yeah, and the humidity, I guess that would adversely affect the functioning of the vehicle. That's why they test everything at the salt flats, right? The Bonneville salt flats,
No humidity, and, yeah, flat as a pancake.
Exactly. So, yeah, I wanted to share something with you here. We'll kind of go off the topic here, away from politics and stuff and JFK and what have you. I'm not going to litigate that. That would take, like, forever. But I saw a rookie bluesman who put out his first blues record at age 63.
Yeah, I saw your note here.
Perform with Dan Auerbach of the Black Keys. And, I mean, he was just incredible.
Robert Finley by name, correct?
Yeah, Robert Finley. Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, the guy's been around a long time, but he just released his first album, you know. I think Dan Auerbach of the Black Keys produced it, and just phenomenal. It really, he was better than Auerbach, as far as I'm concerned, you know. yeah, he did like three songs, you know. And I guess he and Auerbach are collaborating on a album that's being released, I think, December 8th. So I'm going to check that out if I have a chance. But, it was tremendous. I mean, got to see the B-52s. I was probably like 100 feet from them. I was that close to the stage. Maybe the seventh row back in terms of people standing. And then I saw another band called the Growlers, which is the local band that actually hosted the festival, and they were great too. I mean, kind of alternative rock, almost a punk sound, and the lead singer is a dead ringer for Billy Idol in terms of the voice, but just tremendous.
The B-52s were up and grooving and.
Oh, they were great. Yeah, they were great. I mean, and as far as I know, I think the lead singer is still alive, Bob. Haven't checked, though.
Well, how long did it take for you to bump off Tom Petty? It was a good week, wasn't it?
Yeah, let's see. It was the last show I saw was on the 21st or 22nd of September. He was dead October 1st. So that's
and
why,
you want to, yeah, and speaking of somebody else you've seen, I had a note from Clarity a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
When the topic of playing Freebird came up.
Oh.
And Clarity said, if anyone requests Freebird, I sing it with a young Dylan style. Oh, my God.
Oh, geez.
If I leave here tomorrow, would you still remember me?
That's my terrible Dylan impression.
That's not bad. That's not bad. By the way, the parody song was tremendous. Whoever
that's Marcy.
Wrote that she needs to copyright that damn song. You know
what we need to do is find somebody with really the vocal stroke for it, and just get a recording of it. I don't know if that kind of vocal's really in John Fox's wheelhouse. So we'll have to find out.
Well, what about Rocky Mountain Mike? He's a progressive, I know.
You know him?
No, I don't know him, but I know of him.
Oh, right.
Stephanie Miller. And,
yeah, he only does his own stuff.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. Well, you know, maybe they should send a demo to him, and, you know, you can even sing it like a demo and say, hey, you might want to look into this Rocky Mountain.
Well, no, his ears would start bleeding and if I sang it. I mean, it was bad enough I did it once on the air here.
Well, no, that wasn't bad. My ears just are fine, you know. As far as I'm concerned. But another highlight I haven't mentioned of the show was the Steel Pulse, the reggae band. Those guys are just tremendous, you know. And they still have a few of the original members. A guy on the keyboards, the lead singer, looks like he's an original, and then a guy on the bass guitar as well. But yeah, it was just a lot of fun. It was basically all day from, like, the day after my birthday on Sunday in Long Beach. Just kind of like near where they have one of the battleships that's like a tourist area. You can get a tour there if you want, and I'll go on there. I think it's the USS Victory or something like that.
You mean the Missouri?
No, it's not the Missouri.
I don't think we had a Victory.
That
sounds very British. The HMS Victory or something.
Yeah, that does sound British. Well, anyway, it's they had like three stages set up, and you know, festival style music, and you could go from one to the other. And I mean, we saw some really, really cool bands. I was with a date whose birthday was actually the same as my birthday, so we celebrated our birthdays together. So it was nice.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the USS Iowa.
No, it wasn't it. No, it was something else.
The Iowa is
I know it's moored in Long Beach.
Yeah, that's at the LA waterfront.
Yeah. They must have a few of them, Bob, because this did not have the USS Iowa on it. It was like, USS, what the hell is it? That's not now I've got to look it up.
Well, I'm looking now.
Boats moored in Long Beach or whatever, or the L.A. waterfront. Boats moored at L.A. waterfront. I'd just say warships, maybe, huh?
Oh, well, the things we get lost in here.
No kidding. Well, that's the important stuff, you know?
Yeah.
The trivia. What is that called? Let's see here. L.A. waterfront, ready to party, fleet week as ships arrive. Let's see here. It's like near San Pedro, I think. Let's see.
Yeah, that's that. Everything I said says that's the Iowa.
Yeah, there is the Iowa, but it wasn't the Iowa. Believe you me.
Is it docked over by the Queen Mary?
No, it's the other side. It's this little peninsula that kind of juts out into the harbor or whatever. You know, that's where they had it. Oh, is it Berth? Maybe it's the Outer Harbor. Let's see here. What the hell is this here? L.A. waterfront. What is it here? I see the Iowa. It wasn't the Iowa. I would have known that, Bob. I'm from Iowa.
Well, I mean, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's weird. I have no idea what that was.
Well, it'll sort itself out. Overnight, I'll get emails.
Yeah, yeah, right. The research staff here at the Horn, right, Bob?
Right, exactly. The ad hoc research department. So first pitch is what, 6 o'clock your time?
No, it started already. I've kind of got it on the screen here. Let's see here. It's 0-0 in the top of the second is what I saw, and it looks like the Astros just made their third out of the second. I think. Let's see here. For some reason, I can't get it. Oh, there we go. I have too many screens open. Oh, yeah, it's commercial break.
Oh, so. Don't talk to me about too many screens.
Yeah, I have two screens.
One, two,
actually,
three, four, five.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It gets a little complicated.
No kidding. Well, boy, these indictments are exciting, aren't they?
Well, yes, they are, and especially the fact that Mr. Papadopoulos appears to have been wearing a wire for a couple of months.
Ha ha ha! July to October, apparently, huh? At least. Yeah, yeah, I like that. I like that.
And I think it's going to get a lot. And you know, like I said earlier, I'm patting myself on the back for bringing Sessions into the mix on Friday night. I'm proud
of
that.
Yeah.
Because
he may be getting
a special delivery from the Department of Justice, which would be
hilarious.
Yeah. It would be downright Nixonian, is what it would be.
It would be downright Nixonian, and the goddess of irony would have signed the indictment, right, or whatever, or signed the target letter, huh? Jeez.
And that's why they're all going so bananas. Is because, as you pointed out, there probably are target letters floating around, and they can't say they've got target letters.
No, they can't. No, they can't. They can't. Yeah, I mean, Sessions apparently referred Manafort to the Trump campaign. He referred a bunch of these characters to the campaign, and they're like under scrutiny now. So it's like it's almost like he's like one of the.
He was the first senator to jump on the Trump train.
He was one of the.
Not one
yeah,
of. He
one
was
of
the first.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. But, I mean, he's like, you know, you think of a wheel and a spoke. He's like almost the freaking wheel.
Or the
and
hub.
The spokes emanate, or the hub, I guess. Yeah, the hub. And it emanates, the spokes emanate out from him, basically. You know, in terms of, you know, that's how you work conspiracies. And the way that, you know, the way that Mueller has done it is just absolutely genius in terms of, you know, he gets the low-hanging fruit first, of course, Manafort, which I predicted. And I wasn't aware of this Rick Gates guy, the lieutenant for Manafort. But, I mean, you know, you figure if you're laundering $75 million of money, you need to have some help doing it,
hey,
right?
Hey, can I just want to throw something out there. There's a, I think it's in Casablanca, the movie.
Okay.
Where... Not Sidney Green, Peter Lorre, playing Mr. Ugarte, says, "What do you think of me now, Rick?" or somewhere along in there, Bogart says, "I don't mind a thief. What I despise is a cheap one," or something like that.
yeah. Exactly.
And so I was going down the list of all this stuff that Manafort spent money on.
Uh-huh.
We're talking about millions and millions of dollars of illegally, you know, processed money.
Right.
He probably, the funny thing is, he probably earned the money legitimately, although granted he was working for a foreign power, he probably earned it legitimately. Because he and Roger Stone invented the idea of influence, of professional high-dollar influence peddling.
Yeah, right, exactly.
There's a reason that Yanukovych went to him. He was good at what he did. And he had the money to pay with. So, did you notice the vehicles that he bought?
No. No, was there a $500,000 vehicle, one of them?
Oh, fuck no.
Okay.
No. Here's
what did he buy, a fucking Kia or something? Is that a cowbell?
No, yes, you get a cowbell when you buy a fucking Kia. And that's what you have to say in describe the fucking Kia. I drove one of those to D.C. last time. That was my rental. I had a Kia Santa Fe, and it beat me to death.
And just pray that you don't hit anything with it, because you're going to, like, crumple the thing like a cheap newspaper or whatever, you know?
No, so he bought a Mercedes-Benz and a Range Rover.
Okay.
But, again, we're talking about you got $10 million, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He bought a $63,000 Mercedes.
Wow.
Do you know what a $63,000 Mercedes is? It's barely got hubcaps.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's exactly. That's like an E-class tops. You got that kind of money, and you're not buying an S-class or a Maybach. You are a low rent POS.
No kidding. That's like me going out and buying a $500 used car, like I did in law school. You know.
Right, and a $47,000 Range Rover. He was buying used cars.
Oh, my, like pre-owned. Oh, my God. Oh, jeez.
Maybe because he was trying to keep the money on the down low or something. But No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You do the work. You make the money.
Mm-hmm.
You buy. Have you seen those SS300 coupes? I mean, I'm assuming he doesn't need a four-door sedan because he's not hauling a family around or anything.
Oh.
Are these
the top of line Mercedes, like with armor plating and shit?
But they're expensive as hell because, you know, they've got things like twin supercharged V12s in them.
Oh my God, jeez!
You know, 0 to 60 in yesterday.
Those are probably the same engines that they use for the flying cars, Bob.
Could be, but, or you know, or an AMG. Or if you gotta have the four door sedan, get the Maybach. It's good enough for Limbaugh. It's good enough for you, Paul Manafort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Limbaugh has one, huh?
I despise. It's like Bogart said. You know, I don't object to a thief. I object to a cheap one.
A cheap one. Yeah. Right. That's a good line. Everything seems to be movie reference.
You know,
it is in my world. The truth is stranger than fiction these days. I mean, man.
But he's what a cheap, chintzy little piece of shit.
Yeah, no kidding. And I think all the real estate he bought was probably under like names of LLCs or.
Oh yeah, it was all filtered through that Bank of Cyprus.
Which is a sewer. That's known by the Russian.
And being as it's a sewer, what's his name? Secretary of Commerce, Wilbur.
Wilbur Ross.
Wilbur Ross is up to his shiny little pate in that.
And so is the brother of Betsy DeVos, Eric Prince.
Yeah,
he's there. I don't know if he even lives in the U.S. anymore.
I mean, it's actually kind of pleasant to think about that maybe, just maybe, Mueller might be the one who winds up draining the swamp.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I guess there is a possibility, as the esteemed Pat Robertson has said, of Trump issuing a blanket pardon even before all this shit is done. I know the Republicans are starting to, you know, I know Bannon wants Trump to get more aggressive.
Yeah, but again, as Steve in New York pointed out, if he's in a box, because if he pardons mm-hmm. people, then those people cannot not testify.
Well, if they've possibly committed state crimes, then they could have a reasonable fear of incrimination. If the information they provide could be a link in the chain of evidence necessary to lead to a conviction. So, yeah, while they're safe federally, the president doesn't have the power to...
He doesn't have the power to pardon them from state crimes, and they can't refuse to testify under the Fifth Amendment. And as such, in front of a federal judge, they do that, they can go and sit and hold the keys to their own cell.
I suppose if it's in front of a federal judge, but it would be an interesting question as to whether they could assert the Fifth based on a reasonable fear of self-incrimination as to state law crimes if they were.
Well, but what happens
in a federal proceeding?
Yeah, but what happens if it's a grand jury? What happens if you've been pardoned and you get called into a grand jury? Those proceedings are secret, so you can't have any exposure to state crimes.
Well, there are provisions to release that. I think the state could try to issue a subpoena to release the. We're talking really arcane shit here, Bob. But you know.
Well, isn't that what law school's for?
Yeah, that's what law school's for, and we're like way down the rabbit hole. I mean, who would have ever thunk that we'd be dealing with somebody as corrupt as this guy who makes Richard Nixon look like a piker. You know? I mean, talk about just talk about a Philip K. Dick novel, you know? it's just so bizarre that this guy ever became president, you know? And I mean, it's multi-factors. I mean, obviously Hillary was a lousy campaigner and couldn't, and did seem secretive, you know. I mean, she probably that was probably how she dealt with all the scandals that, were surrounded, all the Republican scandal mongering during, her husband's administrations, you know. But, I mean, clearly the Russians had a big impact in it. I don't care what the Jill Steiniak say.
And I didn't even get around to the social media hearings in the Senate today. Once again, Al Franken had a lovely day.
Oh, tell me about it.
He ate, I think it was a Facebook executive that he had for lunch. here it is. Here we go.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a Facebook executive and things were not going well. And Al Franken does not like being stonewalled or filibustered. Let's see. I think you'll be able to hear this. Let me see if I can get it. Let me see if I can get it to roll. We're running out of time.
Cool.
The extent to which the Russians exploited your platforms is bringing the question in. You know, maybe this isn't something. This isn't something just the government has to do. This is something that you guys have to deal with and fix. And you were kind of the canary in the coal mine in 2016, and at the same time, Russia was conducting cyber espionage against American political organizations. They deployed this propaganda program on your platforms, in some case paying for it in rubles. So I want to understand why no one seems to have caught on to the Russian effort earlier. Mr. Stretch, how did Facebook, which prides itself on being able to process billions of data points and instantly transform them into personal connections for its user, somehow not make the connection that electoral ads paid for in rubles were coming from Russia? Those are two data points. American political ads and Russian money, rubles. How could you not connect those two dots?
Senator, you mentioned one aspect of the Russian threat that was so visible in 2016, which was the question of account compromise, stealing contents, and disseminating them. And that's a threat our security team was intensely focused on and we think effectively addressed. I think in hindsight, we should have had a broader lens. There were signals we missed, and we are now...
Like rubles.
People are buying ads on your platform with rubles. They're political ads. You put billions of data points together all the time. That's what I hear that these platforms do. They're the most sophisticated things invented by man ever. Oh, Google has all knowledge that man has ever developed. You can't put together rubles with a political ad and go like, those two data points spell out something bad.
Senator, it's a signal we should have been alert to, and in hindsight, it's one we missed.
Okay, yeah.
He's frustrated.
Will Facebook commit not to accepting political ads paid for with foreign money in the future, say with rubles or the North Korean won? if a political ad with a won is paid for by a won, a North Korean won, will you pledge not to put it on?
Senator, our goal is to require all political advertisers, regardless of currency, to provide documentation information demonstrating that they're authorized to advertise. The currency signal, I understand your point. It's a signal we should have missed.
You can't say no to that.
The currency signal.
You can't say no to that.
It's very easy to
manipulate. Please answer yes or no, sir. I'm asking you a question. Just answer yes or no. Can you do that? You're sophisticated. You're the chief legal counsel for Facebook. Please answer yes or no.
I can tell you that we're not going to permit advertising to permit political advertising by foreign actors. The reason I'm hesitating on foreign currency is that it's relatively easy for bad actors to switch currency. So it's a
he
signal.
He didn't ask that.
But it's not enough. We have
well,
to sweep
then,
more broadly.
Why would anyone use the North Korean won? Why would a bad actor go like, I'm going to trick Facebook. I'm going to use the North Korean won.
Senator, goal is to make sure we're addressing all forms of abuse.
My goal is for you to think through this stuff a little bit better.
I think he was about to say, can I have the tequila bottle in a swirly straw, please?
That is priceless. I mean, what the guy should have answered is, well, yeah, we didn't connect those data points because we're fucking morons.
Well, no, the answer is, we didn't give a shit. We're a bunch of money-grubbing little capitalist fucks. We don't care where the money comes from.
Yeah.
And we don't care what we do to the United States of America. And we don't care if Big Bad Vladdy Daddy winds up running the goddamn country as long as I get mine. Igumfu, goddammit. Right. Igumfu, Al.
I think what was said in network has become true. There is no United States of America. It's just the United States of corporations. You know, Bob?
Yeah.
And it's all about the buck.
Sure it is, and that's all it ever was. Rubles? Well, we can convert those to dollars, can't we? Oh, yeah, we can definitely convert. Well, fuck it. Run it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all there was to it. And unfortunately, we're out of time.
Right, right. One quick point. I was just going to say that, you know, if he could have easily said, no, we won't accept ads if it's in a foreign currency. You know, that's ridiculous. It's a simple no. What the fuck, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Bob. Well, happy Halloween.
Happy
Thanks
Halloween,
for
Rick.
My call, man.
Oh, my pleasure. You take care. We'll talk Friday, I reckon.
Awesome. Sounds good. All right.
Later.
Have a good one.
And so, I bid you a fond farewell for this Halloween. Boo. Thanks very kindly to all of you who keep all of this going. Wasn't that a fun evening? I sure thought so. I didn't read The Raven or anything, but it was nice just to not have to do what I didn't have to do tonight. Wasn't that wonderful? And we have nudged the Norsky, licked the Lithuanian, and cashed the check along the way. So, awesomeness. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and all-around great guys, Steve from Georgistan in the chat room. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Coal River Mountain Watch. And, of course, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.